I'm Fred McMurray, which means this must be...
Pillars, pillars, pillars of franchising. Pillars, pillars, pillars of franchising.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of Pillars of Franchising. Hope you're all having a great week out there. Today is the infamous Friday Eve, and we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be joined by Christina Vance and talk about some franchise business with her from Rise Collective Wellness. Sorry, I wanted to forget the word Rise. And speaking of Rise, Karen, what's rising in the news this week?
Love it. Great segue there. You know, it's interesting. I was taking a look at Piper Sandler. They recently released their semi-annual survey, and it's called Taking Stock with Teens.
Okay.
And, you know, we're always interested, right, in what's ahead. And, yeah. And especially with Gen Z and Gen Alpha, you know, what are some of those trends? What you know, they're restaurants need to really prepare for the kind of business and how people are spending that their money, that spending power, because we all know, you know, what they spend on now, that's going to lead to brand loyalty in the future.
Oh, yeah. This is kind of like when, was it Taco Bell that did that thing for the tacos and all kinds of different incentives to get people engaged in their brands, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So what's going on the teen scene?
Well, it's interesting. There's several things that were very interesting to me. First of all, Raising Cane's. And that's, you know, that's a franchise that's really gaining in popularity, I think, in general, and,
yeah.
and you know, and having some real traction, but it's really gaining traction with the, you know, with the teens. They kind of broke into the top five. And when
really?
It talks about, pardon me?
I said, really? That's,
yeah.
that's interesting, because they're not the cheapest game in town,
no.
right? And
no.
really, they're all fried chicken.
Absolutely, absolutely. But one of the reasons they gave that it could be is because they partnered with Post Malone. For those of you who don't know Post Malone, right, they're a rock band or, you know, whatever you want to call, musical band. And they're very popular. They've won all these awards and everything. And so just by, they're pretty cool. And they're pretty cool by, I think, you know, kind of really connecting with them. So they think that's really raised the awareness with their brand. So that's one thing that I found interesting. Chick-fil-A, it seems like it's always number one, which doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chick-fil-A is number one. And then a couple other things that I found interesting. McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times I think of McDonald's as this kind of like tried and true brand. I think of it for like maybe the kids with the Happy Meals and adults.
Yeah.
Yet with teens right now, it's really gaining more traction. I think it gained 3% from the last survey. And a lot of the reasons is because McDonald's has really been focused on the digital business.
Yep.
And, you know, if you think about teens with their phones, I mean, I don't think they've ever lived life without a phone, without a mobile phone.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, even my youngest, who is 15, he started playing on my phone when he was 2, right? Because
right.
it's the quick, easy fix or something these guys found. That's really interesting. You know, the other thing that I noticed with McDonald's is not that long ago, they had meals that were named after these pop stars or whatever, right? So that again, like you said, makes the connection. So I guess the question that I have is, where does Taylor Swift go next?
I'm right there with you. So
I mean, I guess if I were like a smoothie brand or like a healthy brand, I'd be all over that.
Oh, I would too. I mean, because everything she touches, right, has crazy growth and recognition.
We could have the Swiftie smoothie or something, right?
We could, definitely, definitely. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, when we were talking about this, I had mentioned to you the crazy thing that this does for a lot of these businesses is, like, with my kids, I'll say, hey, what do you guys want to have for dinner? And they're like, oh, we already ordered DoorDash. I'm like, you ordered DoorDash? Like, they're just, they get their brands. Chipotle happens to be a house favorite. And so the next thing I know, I've got a delivery of Chipotle. It cost me $30.
Yeah.
For 2 burritos and delivery. And I'm like, $30 burritos, really? But it's their accessibility to the brand and having that delivery service if they can't drive to bring it right to them. It's crazy. Our middle school actually had to say that they will no longer accept deliveries from like DoorDash and all the different restaurants because they were getting inundated at lunchtime with kids ordering something other than, you know, brown bag lunches and cafeteria food.
Okay, just think about how crazy that is. To me, I didn't even think about that, Kristen, but you're right. And so, and I think it's going to continue, obviously. And then because if you think about it, if this is how they're ordering food, this is how it's going to continue. This is going to be a trend that's going to continue. So then as a franchisee and even someone looking at franchising, it'd be taking a look at the brands and how they're becoming more, not only relevant with teens, but then how are they kind of moving more into a digital business? How are they marketing? You know, some of the really cool marketers, you know, they're going over to like TikTok and doing some other things. So a lot of people are trying to figure that out.
A lot of those platforms are platforms that I know of because I see them on my kids' phones, but I don't know how to get on them. Like Snapchat, they live there, but I can't get on them. So it's a good thing that somebody's figured out how to reach them. Maybe they can share parenting tips next.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome, Karen. That's very exciting. I mean, really, it's good to see that these restaurant establishments and some other, you know, retailers as well are finding new ways to reach out to the younger people. Hopefully, they can do that to attract them in terms of talent for working at these places as well. I mean, what a great way to reel them in.
Yeah, I agree.
Awesome. Well, we have a great show today. So as soon as we're ready, Fred Hughes is up, and we'll get started with Christina Vance.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Hey, franchise owners. How's your local marketing? Do you feel like you could use some help keeping up with your social media posts and comments and reviews? Do you wonder if you could be doing more to attract local customers? Are you able to identify new move-ins to your local area? At Westvine, we help franchisees like you reach more local customers through digital marketing. With daily monitoring, creative content, and ad placement, and customer data intelligence, we'll get your business in front of the people who want your products or services. We also work with franchisors who need an agency to handle the digital marketing for all of their locations. If you're ready to reach more local customers, give us a call at 805-265-5440 or visit us at westvine.com. That's 805-265-5440 or Westvine with a Y.com.
And welcome back. We have the great pleasure of speaking to Christina Vance today. She's the CEO of Rise Collective Wellness. Hi, Christina.
Hi, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so glad you could take time out of your busy schedule and talk to us.
I'll do my best. We'll see if a dog or a child interrupts us, but I've warned them all. We'll see.
Well, that's good to know. So you are a mom, a dog mom, and a business owner.
Yeah. We got a lot, like a lot of us, we have a lot of different balls up in the air and we do our best to not drop them. And sometimes they do anyway, but.
Yeah. You know, you just pick them back up and keep on going, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So tell us a little bit about you and your journey in and through franchising and what you're doing today.
Sure. Yeah. So my background is in marketing and sales, but when I was 16 years old, I was a longtime dancer and I had just started to explore some group fitness classes at Bally's Total Fitness in the Midwest back in the 90s. And I learned how to teach step and high-low aerobics. And so during high school, college, in my professional career, always I was in and out of teaching group fitness classes in some capacity. You know, there were some times where I was out of it, but there was usually something happening in the background just because that's always been a steady part of my life. When my husband and I got married and started to have a family, I was traveling several nights a week for a few years after we had our first child. And I loved my job and I loved the travel, but it just was really challenging to not be present and not be available all the time. And as a mom, that was always conflicting. And so I thought I was quitting my job. Mm-hmm. I went to my employer and I said, you know, I love this, but I can't be on the road this much. They were lovely and said, wait, don't don't leave? What if you don't have to send them to childcare? And what if you only travel once a quarter? And like, what can we do to make it work? And so that was amazing. I say it's Bangor Candy Company. They make Dum Dum lollipops and the only manufacturer of candy canes in the U.S. And they treated me wonderfully. And I started to teach bar class during that time when I had a little bit of spare time. And I started working at a franchise just as a teacher. And I enjoyed it so much that when my husband was transferred to a different state, we made a, you know, cross-country move about 9 years ago. We landed in the market. I felt like, okay, we got our three kids. We got it sort of buttoned down. He's from an entrepreneurial family. Yeah. They were all business owners his whole life. That was never something that was tremendously interesting to me, but that was always sort of on his mind. And what kept coming up was, well, what are we going to do?
Sure. And with three kids.
Yeah. What are we gonna do?
what business should we start? And I'm like, well, I love this. You know, I love the women at the studio. I love being connected to a community. I like the supportive environment that happens sometimes when you get that sort of micro community of people that have just one common ground. They all love this practice. So we decided maybe we should explore the idea of franchising with the company that I was familiar with and the practice that I love so much. So we opened our franchise in 2016,
okay.
And throughout the last, you know, 7 and change years, we've built a really amazing community of women that have, again, that sort of shared goal of trying to embrace total health together.
Right.
And then about 2 years ago, so during the pandemic, like every business everywhere, there were several shifts and changes and challenges that came, and we really started to evaluate, were we serving our community in the way that was going to be best for our community, not the, you know, just the whole world of small boutique fitness, but I wanted to know how I could serve, you know, the 150 women that were coming into my business every day. And there were just a few things that I found that we weren't serving them best. And we started to explore alternate areas. I went back to school to study nutrition so that I could address a different piece of health and wellness outside of movement. We started to talk a lot more about connection, community, faith, sleep, the other factors of health that I believe are much more important or create a puzzle of greater health rather than just we got to work out. There's a lot more that plays into creating a healthy dynamic in your body and your mind.
Sure.
So with that, we started to think maybe we are not absolutely in alignment with what our franchise is able to provide us right now. Why don't we explore what it would look like to be a little bit more independent? And we rebranded this last March and became Rise Collective Wellness. And so we were just very excited to take this journey and, you know, beginning as a franchisee, learning a lot during that time, and then now feeling a little bit more capable of springboarding into a direction that is just custom built for what we know our customer needs and wants.
Can you tell us a little bit about the, before we, because I have so many questions now based on
that. Oh, no, I lost audio.
Yeah.
I can't hear you.
Can you tell us a little bit about the kind of the business model, you know, as far as like just the whole, the customer, kind of the customer base and the model that you have?
Yeah, so we're primarily membership based. We have other offerings, but for the most part, our students come to us looking for a movement practice, and we have several modalities that we can offer them, and we try to round our schedule out where they can find that. Most of our customers are on some type of longer term agreement, 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. And those have varying levels, right? We have unlimited memberships. We have limited memberships. We also sell 10 packs. We offer childcare in the studio just to sort of serve the community in that different way. I do retreats with our members. So we're leaving next week on a retreat. We do those about twice a year, just again, trying to facilitate connection outside of the classroom, just among the community, where we spend a little bit more time diving a little bit into some of those other aspects of health that oftentimes get neglected with busy, mostly women. I mean, we're primarily women, and trying to cultivate a little bit more room for finding balance.
Wow. I can see why it's wellness, because, you know, exactly as you described, this is so much more than just a boutique gym. So when you rebranded, can you tell us a little bit about the journey that you had to go through to make that happen? I mean, we talked earlier and you've done extremely well in keeping your customer base and keeping a successful business.
Yeah, I mean, just just like anything. I mean, I think there were some pros and cons that came with the challenges of COVID for everybody. So it gave us some time to really evaluate, you know, why are we doing this, right? Because, I mean, I don't know if it's everybody, but I know most folks in my shoes, the fitness industry in general, from a brick and mortar standpoint, took a pretty heavy hit. People were kind of forced into a situation where they needed to develop some strategies for maintaining their fitness routine outside of their brick and mortar gym, whether they wanted to or not.
Yeah.
And then with that, the longer that time passed, it worked for some people. And then for other people, they're like, oh, I absolutely have to be, you know, in the space with others. So I think it kickstarted my needing to adopt the idea that I needed to be a little bit more flexible and open to changing my plans. And that started, you know, at the beginning of March when there were shades of, are we going to have to close the studio? Okay. Well, we've been thinking it's a great idea to have an online platform for years. Maybe we're going to have to figure out how to do that. And same thing. So all of this kind of started with like, I don't really want to be uncomfortable. I don't really want to change. And then it's like, well, do you want to stay in business and continue to serve your customers the absolute best way possible?
So you have to
start asking a lot of questions. And, you know, we adore Bar and Cycle. We've always been Bar and Cycle. We'll die coming down saying it's one of like the best things you can do for your body from a, you know, low impact and high benefit standpoint. And as I get older and as my community is aging and as women are, you know, premenopausal and menopausal and postmenopausal, there's other things that I'm experiencing in my own body that are different than when I was in my 20s, 30s. So maybe we need to explore strength training, which I have a tremendous background in, but I never built it into my business. I started talking about it and personally training some of my students, and I'm like, why am I doing this on the side? Why don't we just make it part of what our offering? And so I'd like to think that I had a master plan of exactly how this was going to go the moment we opened those doors 8 years ago. But in fact, it's just an adventure of discovering what's going to be best for the people around me and for myself. And then we kind of go for it with a strong team, a willingness to learn that maybe we didn't have it right the first time. We're always willing to adjust and see if we can get it right.
Ability to pivot, right? I mean, you pivoted, you used creativity. And I think those are the companies and the franchises, small businesses, they're the ones that really have excelled, have stayed relevant, you know, post-COVID. I mean, during COVID and post-COVID. So I really applaud you for that. You know, one of the things I was thinking about when you were talking about, you know, the whole that you were drawn to the franchising. And we all know franchising is just a great way to go, you know, for many people. And a lot of our listeners are actually, you know, are looking in that. They're looking to that. So as you take a look at your journey, what surprised you the most about even as you were taking a look at franchises, even in the due diligence process? I mean, anything that surprised you the most?
You know, like a lot of franchisees, I think I probably went in knowing less than I should have going in, right? And thankfully, like my background in sales and marketing and like that business acumen that came with just me I was a business major. So I had a little bit more comfort in those areas. And like a lot of franchises, I became very close to some other franchisees just through friendship. That was probably the greatest asset for me in my franchise experience, was these relationships that I developed with others. And then sometimes we were able to come together and say like, well, I'm not very good in this area, but you are. So we've had several weekends where I would meet up with a few franchisees and I would, you know, kind of say like, let's map out our automation emails this way. And then somebody else would say, here's all my new ideas for innovation in terms of class content. So it's sort of that collaborative effort. But the surprising thing was a lot of franchisees don't come in with the same strength. And I think a lot of franchisees come looking for a franchise to have all of the answers for everything they don't know.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's true and sometimes that is not true. So I loved physical fitness. I felt confident in my ability to build and develop that, but it wasn't what lit my heart on fire, right? I felt so good about what I had been taught and what I was being told to teach and how to teach it and how to understand the body better, that to me, the value really came in them teaching me about that and then make me feel more confident. You know, I had a bit of imposter syndrome in that area. And so it was really lovely to be taught by experts in the field that really were capable of coaching me on becoming a better teacher and doing it safely in a way that was productive for everybody.
So are those some of the things that the franchisor provided to you?
My franchise specifically was very strong in product content when I started, and it attracted me to them, yes.
Okay. And tell me a little bit about, as you, obviously this has opened the door for you for something much bigger and more what you're looking for. But is there anything, you know, looking back that you would say you're most thankful for in having the franchise system?
I think the ability to have to me, it feels like you have a little bit of a life jacket on, right? So you open the doors of that business, and even if they don't know what's going on, that's going wrong, at least you have somewhere to go to, right? There's other people, even if it's not the franchise that had the answers, it was the other women in the community that were doing the same thing. Are you seeing this? Yes, I am, which, you know, sometimes is, it's productive and it cannot be, right? During the pandemic, sometimes we would have these calls with everybody. And it's like, well, just so you know, it's not just you that's, you know, suffering wildly. And you're like, well, that's not great. Like, I'm hoping someone's figured out how to stop the bleeding, right? So in some ways, commiserating is not productive. But just having that a perceived support system or an actual support system, I think that's where the franchise comes in, because as a collective, to me, it's always better if you're not alone in something.
Absolutely. I always look at it as group therapy, right?
I agree. And it's like this community where you're, right, where you're, you mentioned you're kind of commiserating, but you're also sharing ideas. And just by talking it through, you're right, Kristen, it is group therapy.
Yeah. We're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, we'll talk to Christina Vance more about her adventures in going from a franchisor to an entrepreneur and what she thought about the entire process. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, franchise owners. How's your local marketing? Do you feel like you could use some help keeping up with your social media posts and comments and reviews? Do you wonder if you could be doing more to attract local customers? Are you able to identify new move-ins to your local area? At Westvine, we help franchisees like you reach more local customers through digital marketing. With daily monitoring, creative content, and ad placement, and customer data intelligence, we'll get your business in front of the people who want your products or services. We also work with franchisors who need an agency to handle the digital marketing for all of their locations. If you're ready to reach more local customers, give us a call at 805-265-5440 or visit us at westvine.com. That's 805-265-5440 or westvine.com.
And welcome back. We are talking with Christina Vance with Rise Collective Wellness and her journey in and through franchising. Welcome back. Thank you again, Christina, for joining us. We want to talk a little bit now. You've been through kind of the full cycle, and your husband works for a franchisor, so I can just imagine the kind of discussions that happen at home in terms of the overall franchising. But I'd like to talk a little bit about what you feel are some of the most important things when you're looking to buy a franchise in terms of doing due diligence.
Yeah, it's a great question that I wish I had, you know, thought through when I was doing it. I think really coming down to why do you want this? Why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Which it sounds like such a basic question, but I think a lot of people, I have a girlfriend that's right now, you know, deciding whether or not to move forward, and truly, and not in a critical way, her answer is, I don't know, it just kind of sounds cool. And it's like, okay, let's figure out more about that, right? So are you doing this for work-life balance? Are you doing this for money? Are you doing this because you're passionate about the product or the project? Or what's your why?
Yeah.
And then what is the thing that you think the franchise is going to provide you with to support that mission?
Yeah.
You can't align those two, right? So for me, like, I wanted product, right? I felt like we probably could figure out how to run the business, although I would have loved some coaching there. I also knew that that wasn't the strength of the franchise that I was aligning with. However, if it were the opposite, right? If I were tremendously passionate about product development at that stage of my life in the same way that I am now, And I had almost no knowledge regarding marketing or sales or systems or even any of the technology part of running a business. I would have needed to ask a lot of questions to understand, do I need to hire someone to assist? Are you capable of helping me do this? So just trying to understand where are your strengths, where are your deficits, and does this franchise have the ability to support you where you need the support?
Yeah, I think that's so important. So where did you go to find that information, or did you not find it? When you were looking at this particular franchise, where did you go to find that information?
Well, so I think I was lucky because I was working for another franchisee as a teacher at the time. So I had exposure to the brand. I had comfort with the brand. I was given visibility into, I feel like I walked in with my eyes wide open in a really positive way. As you know, sometimes groups of franchisees can almost have a bit of like a, it can go negative a little bit sometimes. And yeah. I think that's unfair. I truly do think that's unfair. That's been the lens that I've been seeing it through, you know, for the last several years. And as you said, you know, I'm married to somebody who works on the other side, and that's been a really awesome opportunity to see. We're both running businesses, right? But we're the I'm the customer, the franchisee. And so I was fortunate in that I had visibility into like the good and the ugly. It wasn't just the sales side of the arm that I knew about. I knew, right, some of the things that were going to be challenging, and that was good. It still made the decision to do it, which is wonderful. So it just depends on the franchise. I mean, if I'm a franchisor, to be honest, am I going to put you with my most disgruntled franchisee? Probably not, right?
Right.
But it would not be a bad idea to have the opportunity to speak with several franchisees when you're making that decision.
Yeah.
You can make an informed decision. There's a lot of value that comes from franchisors. I mean, there's a tremendous, and I think oftentimes what happens with small business owners begin as a franchise, learn a lot, and then get a little arrogant in that now that you're of no value to me, right?
You see it, don't you? And the ones, the franchisees that learn how to have that, see where the franchise is coming from, and even the franchising systems that where they both see they need each other, because they really do.
Absolutely.
And when there's a connection there, that you think that's when it works the best. When I think it's when it starts, when the balance starts going one way or another, that's where it can get a little kind of, that's where you get some of the conflict.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, a truly symbiotic relationship is ideal when
Yeah.
I want to give our guests the phone number to call in, because I know this is a really interesting conversation. And Christina, you got an experience that's different than just about everybody else that we've interviewed so far. So that number to call in with your questions, and or you can always go into chat, is 323-580-5755. Again, 323-580-5755. So Christina, you know, obviously when you're validating and you're doing your due diligence, the FDD is a big, scary document.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us how much time you wound up spending on that big, ugly thing?
Well, mine wasn't enormous, but we did decide to hire a lawyer to help us review it and feel equipped to and just again, like anything, the franchisor is developing documentation that supports their side of the business, right?
Yes.
The agreement between franchisor and franchisee is designed to protect the franchisor. Mm-hmm. As they should. So just doing your due diligence on your side to truly understand what you are agreeing to and make sure that you are comfortable with those terms. And if you're not, some franchisees will adjust and some won't. And that's just going in. It's like a marriage. Like, learn what you need to know. You're getting into this relationship together that has, you know, legal binding terms. You want to feel really good about the contract you're entering into.
Absolutely. I think that's very well put. And you know, you're in it usually for a 10-year stint. Some of these are 20 years. And so you should never tread lightly.
No, absolutely not. And if you know more about what you're looking at, there's far less chance for conflict down the road, right? So if you haven't read what they sent you and then you run into a situation in 3 years and you're like, well, I didn't know that you could, you know, I knew you would sell somebody a franchise 4 miles down the road that's going to actively compete with me. It's like, well, did you put anything in your agreement that gave you preferred refusal, or did you put anything in your agreement that really defined your territory?
Right.
And if you didn't,
right,
you know, this is sort of a, it's, we need to do our due diligence and know the relationship that we're in and the rules surrounding it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that's a key thing for, because you said you knew a little bit about the business. And so,
yeah.
So did you kind of go in with eyes wide open?
I do feel like I did. And I had, you know, a front row seat to some conflict, right, in the market that I was teaching in, surrounding some of those things. So I was very protective of my territory, very protective of, you know, first right of refusal and what does that look like and what are these timelines like. For me, that was the most important thing at the time. I think maybe with a little bit of delusion, I was thinking, I'll probably own like 5 of these in the next few years before I really knew what it was going to take for me to, you know, be successful with the one location. But again, with this vision for myself, protecting what I thought we were moving towards was important.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's important because everybody comes in, you know, you go back to your why, right? I mean, that's one of the first things that I ask people is, hey, can you help me? I'm like, okay, well, why do you want to do it? You know, what is it that you think it's going to provide to you that your current situation isn't providing to you? And really trying to determine, easy to think that you're going to buy a plug and play business or a business in a box or a semi to full absentee business. But the reality is, it's not really realistic.
I hope that exists. And if you find it, I will buy 5.
Exactly. And, you know, and the scary piece is I think people will talk about that. Like, I'm looking for that. Or even on the other side, oh, this is plug and play.
Yeah.
And it's not, or when someone's like, I just want to be this absentee owner and I just want to earn money and I'll let other people take care of the details. And that's like, no, that's a little scary because again, if someone has that, let us know, call in, because I've never seen it.
I remember asking a lot of those questions during my due diligence process to other owners. Like, I wanted to know, like, how much are you working? Right? Mm-hmm. I want to know how many hours you are putting in.
Yeah.
The follow-up question I did not ask was, what, because I felt uncomfortable, can I see your financials?
Yeah.
And how much are you working? Because you can work 20 hours a week for free. That's cool. Right? But, and I don't know that I knew enough to ask those questions, which is, you know, shameful that I entered into it really without that thought in mind. But I was trying to figure out if I could widget this business into like a part-time role that could work alongside my part-time job, right? My career.
Yeah.
And no, I couldn't do that, right? My business specifically was not going to run the way that I needed it to run with me involved in the way that I wanted to be involved as a part-time gig, right? So and maybe someone can do it, or maybe it's kicking off enough revenue where you can truly employ someone at a high enough salary where they can do that. But I would even say you probably need to get inside of it and understand if what they need to be doing before you put that in place. That's not straight out the gate.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's easy to say you'll just go ahead and hire someone. And that's, unfortunately, a lot of the models out there that are semi-absentee, they say, well, you're gonna hire a manager right away. But if your answer is to send this person off to training and you don't go and take it seriously and you don't work the business for a while so that when something goes awry, when your financials aren't working out, you really have to understand where to look. You need to look at your KPIs and understand, what are the drivers that I need to push right now to project my business in the right direction? Because money flies when you're not paying attention and you have no idea sometimes where it's going, and you can be ripped off super easily if you just put somebody else in charge.
Or what if they leave?
That's right. I was just going to say that that's more than likely to happen, right?
Yeah,
they're like, okay, I'm gone. And then, and then the owner is like, well, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Well, and this simple idea that people hiring the right people is so the simple is just, in my experience anyway, I mean,
painful.
We have hiring is difficult, right? The employee side of business ownership is incredibly challenging. We have been so fortunate in that over time, we have just really built an incredible team. But that's not easy, right? It takes a long time. It takes a lot of luck. I always say, you know, we've never had a whole lot of luck with some, you know, mass hiring platforms, but my studio manager came from just, you know, an ad out in Indeed, and she's like the best thing that's ever happened to me aside from my kids and my because without her, it just, my life would be so much more complicated. And so good people are very difficult to find and important to retain.
I think that's a really good point. That's Karen's cup of tea all the way.
It is. Yeah. And you're right. They're just like, oh, just hire these people. I'm like, no, you don't understand. Because also I would think in your type of business that you are a people business. So you've got to make sure you have the right people and the right jobs, because if not, I can see where someone then, because it's not a commodity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it isn't. Yeah, it's very important. And a little bit, you know, that's what's cool about it a little bit too, is, you know, we have a pretty good sized teaching team for a business of our size, and not everyone's the same. But that's great, because not everyone's attracted to the way that I do things, but all of our staff is warm and welcoming and kind and gracious to someone that comes in the door. Like, that's a non-starter. So there's a uniform level there. But then there's different personalities make up kind of a little bit more spice and kind of attract, you know, different people are attracted to different teachers and all that kind of cool stuff.
That's true.
I think that's interesting. And you know, I often talk to people who say, well, you know, this is my passion, so I want to own a business that is my passion. And, you know, I know what I tell them, but what would you say to somebody who says, you know, somebody like you, or somebody who says, oh, I just love healthy foods, and so I want to open this franchise that does nothing but serve, you know, poke bowls or whatever the case may be. What kind of advice would you give to somebody who's really just chasing a passion?
That's what a lot of small business books are about, where they kind of draw these parallels between why small businesses fail. It's like, the passion is important. I'll just say it as an absolute truth, and someone can argue with me, and that's fine. But I mean, the product is primary, because without a good product, you have really nothing to, and you know, our product is the service, but still it's our product, our class content, my nutrition coaching, like the experience that you have in the studio, that's our product. And so to have a good product, sometimes it's important to have passion surrounding it. Sometimes it's not. But without the understanding of what it's going to take from a financial perspective to allow you to keep pursuing that passion, you know, you would do it for very long, right? So, and I've had, you know, women, it's been so interesting to kind of speak with other women that are in my circle, and I'm actually fortunate enough to be sort of like mentoring one and doing some coaching as she starts to build a business that's completely different than what we do. But that's front and center. And I've also talked to women who are like, well, it's not about the money for me. And it's like, well, that's okay, but it needs to be.
Right.
You want to keep doing it. And I'm not saying you have to have these astronomical financial goals, but you do need to be able to pay your rent. The lights on, you're probably also going to want to eat sometime. So
exactly. You don't want to work for free.
No. Well, I mean, very few of us are just so financially independent that isn't a factor. And like, maybe if we had that sort of financial success, I would love to say I'd still run the studio, and I would just let anyone who wants to come in for free. And wouldn't that be amazing? And and I would probably maybe do that. Right. But that's how we are today. And I think we can do both. It's not greedy to be expected to pay for producing something that's valuable to other people, and you can feel good about what you're doing and make a living doing it at the same time.
Yeah, I didn't ever dream of cleaning houses. Right? Like, that wasn't my dream. And so when I worked with a broker or a consultant, and I said, you know, she asked me the same kind of questions that I ask people. And she said, you know, here's three different models. And I mean, they all seemed okay, right? Like, nothing was like a bright, shiny package. Nothing had a big ribbon on it that made me excited. But when you dig in, and you go beyond the label and you look at what does it provide you? What's the quality of life? Like you, I have 3 kids. As soon as actually I signed my agreement, I got pregnant with my 3rd and I was like, holy crap, right? Like, yeah, and so what do? And that happens a lot of times where people, you get attracted to this brand, right? Everybody wants a crumble cookie. Well, guess what? It's pretty, it's shiny, it comes with a big, big pink bow. But does it give you the lifestyle you want? Does it provide the financials that you need? And are you good at managing that many people?
Yeah.
And inventory, and it's a little bakery. It's also, you know, you got to have some marketing, and it's a little bit of retail. I mean, not everybody is cut for every single business.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, we have the opposite experience, you know, after we opened the studio, which I'm deeply passionate about the product. You know, my husband and I, but my husband was the one that ran it and did such a good job with it. You know, we purchased a different franchise and it was a tree service.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't know anything about trees going in, right? But he is, he's incredibly financially savvy and he's excellent with people. And so over that time, he became an arborist. He learned about trees. And more importantly, he's an excellent manager of people and was able to cultivate just a whole new culture in the company. And really that's what drove his success, in my opinion, was that he stepped into it running a business that was people-centered around the team and then felt great about providing an excellent product service to the people who were hiring them. So again, it never really light bulbed with us until we were sitting with another couple talking about this, is that we've gone through our whole marriage, you know, what business does he want to buy?
Yeah.
Or what does he want to do? We couldn't, well, what do you love? What do you want to do? And, you know, one of his best friends now said, well, I don't really care what it is. I just want to buy a business that I can, you know, kind of change the profit margins on,
grow,
develop, and either keep or sell. I don't care what the business does. And I think we were both like, oh my goodness, that's what you want. That's what we should do. We should just buy a business, buy it, and then learn about it then. So we did the opposite there, and he did a great job with that.
That's why it's so important to make sure that, because, you know, and Kristen, you're saying like there's 3 different business models. That's why, you know, for people that are really looking at franchising, there's so much out there. There's so much available. It's making sure that you tap into people that have knowledge of it, that can steer you. Because as you mentioned, Christina, there are different ways of looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And to kind of take a look at all of that before you make a purchase.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still, I think franchising is great. I mean, I'm in my 2nd term. I can't believe just a couple of years will be 20 years.
And wow.
The one thing, and I still talk to the gal who helped me choose this model, and it's because in the process, you form a relationship with somebody who's presenting to you, right? And the thing that she picked up with me that I didn't see was that all of the employees I had managed, all of the HR experience I had, all of when I interviewed with her basically as a consultant, she picked up on the fact that, oh, you're good with people. So for her, without this filter on saying don't clean houses, right? She's like, okay, so what's a people-centered business? What kind of business do you need to go in where it's about employee retention and culture? And that's how she helped me choose a brand rather than the pink shiny box, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I'm sure, hopefully those are some of the conversations that you and your friends have too, because it may be the most unlikely model that she's never heard of before. Maybe it's totally not something she ever thought she would do, but it's the one that uses her true skill set to be successful and to make others successful, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, well, I do have to give a shout out to your husband because he is one of our business coaches for Molly Made, and he does an amazing job. And I was very excited when they hired him because he actually came in with franchisee experience. He understands what it takes to grow a business. That's how we started chatting about you and your adventure. And I said, oh my gosh, finally, we have somebody that really gets it. And, you know, I think both of you are very lucky to have each other. And I can't wait to see where it is that your wellness center goes next. I could paint all kinds of visions already that you probably already have done. How do we do, you know, bars and shakes and all this other stuff? But I think that you are on a great track, and I'm really excited to follow up with you in a couple of years to see where you're at.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Yeah, I loved it. Any last thoughts for those that are listening who want to or are thinking about buying a franchise?
I think if it's sort of in your heart that you're interested in being entrepreneurial and beginning a business, it deserves attention. And if you're considering it, I always encourage people to go for it, but just don't leap before you make sure your parachute's attached to your back.
Absolutely.
Good call.
Love it.
Thank you so much, Christina. And where can people get a hold of you if they'd like to chat about your experience?
Yeah, they can reach me on my website, risecollectivewellness.com. They can email me at Christina@risecollectivewellness.com. Obviously, they're in my local area. We'd love them to come in, but we do have a virtual platform, and I do online nutrition consulting through the power of the internet like we're doing today. So those are the best.
Thank you so much, Christine. It's a pleasure
meeting
you. And I'm going to be calling you about that nutrition consulting.
That sounds great. I'll do my best.
I know. Could you just move to Chicago, Karen, and I'll be your first two clients.
Exactly. Yeah.
Very good. Thank you so much. And we'll be right back after this.
50 graduates resulting in 7 new franchisees owning 8 franchise brands, more than a dozen skilled graduates who are employees of franchise companies, all of them having earned a concentration in franchising exclusively granted by the Titus Center at Palm Beach Atlantic University, plus more than 80 franchise professionals on our advisory board. The Titus Center for Franchising is on fire in West Palm Beach, Florida. What do you need to join us? My students want to hear from you. They may even want to buy your franchise or work for your company. TitusCenter.com.
And I want to thank you all for joining us today on another episode of Pillars of Franchising. A special thank you to Christina Vance for taking time out of her very busy day and away from her wellness center to speak with us. A lot of great things learned in her interview today. I'd like to thank our Million Dollar Mentors, Jerry Akers, Karen Kimsey Ford, and Ray Pillar for their continued support and commitment to the show. Not to forget Laura List, our franchise lawyer on our team. And last but not least, Fred McMurray, our producer. I am Kristen Chalmessy, your 4th Million Dollar Mentor here at the Pillars of Franchising. We hope you'll join us again next time, next Thursday, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, the dream starts here. Have a great day. Thank you.